Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.
Disrespect, so when I bust my rhyme, you break your neck. We got 5 minutes for us to disconnect.
All the band is out on the field. He's looking for the ball. We are so away from tradition, because when we be out, girl, it's full of that. Smith caught him right down the line. It may go. Go crazy, folks.
Let's get into it. Pass comes into Jordan. Here's Michael at the foul line. A shot on Elo. Good!
Welcome to this week's edition of The Sporting Edge. I'm Xander. I'm here with my main man, Bub. And Bubba, I know this is a sports show, and we just do sports and sports news, but I thought we should take a minute out to send our thoughts and prayers to those in France. If you didn't hear, which I'm sure you have by now, but on Thursday there was a major terrorist attack in France, over 80 people dead, a lot of turmoil, a lot of confusion, and a lot of bad things going on, and we've kind of seen that recently in the world. There's been some tough times lately, and you know, I just thought we should take a minute out and send our thoughts and prayers their way, because you know they need it right now. And
I agree with you. I think that you know, the cowards again, once they got them, and the terrorists of ISIS are in full bloom. That's the third attack in about 14 months in France. And you know, as we get back into sports, I just like to. I wish we had a leader that would say, okay, it's time. Enough sitting back and not worrying about it and go get them, because all the generals, everybody wants to go kill them. So let's just go take care of it.
All right. And so anyways, let's start off the day with some sports. Get some big news out of Broncos camp, Bub. Von Miller agreeing to a 6-year, $114 million deal, $70 million guaranteed. This is the most guaranteed money by any defensive player in the history of the NFL, and second all-time to Andrew Luck's $87 million guaranteed money that he recently signed. I think this is big news for the Broncos. I mean, they needed this.
Well, listen, they won. They didn't win because of Peyton Manning. They won because of their defense. He's one of the best defenders. I wasn't surprised. I think they tried to play a little bit of hardball with him early, but eventually they knew that if they were going to really keep the franchise going and be successful, that it's got to be done on the defensive end.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. Von Miller, I think, has slowly progressed, or you could say quickly, into, you know, maybe the best defensive player in the NFL. I mean, it was so apparent in the Super Bowl and in the AFC Championship game that, you know, the pressure that he put on the quarterback, I think, was the main deciding factor in the outcomes of those two games. I mean, if you remember watching back to Patriots-Broncos, Tom Brady looked so uncomfortable in that game. You know, he could barely get a pass off without Von Miller and DeMarcus Ware being in his face. And Cam Newton, who led, I think, maybe the best offense in the league this past year, was completely overwhelmed by the Broncos' defense. And again, a main part of that was Von Miller. So I thought this was a necessary signing, especially with, you know, the uncertainty at quarterback. I know Peyton Manning wasn't great last year, but Brock Osweiler left, and he was supposedly the guy who was supposed to take the reins. So, I mean, if you're going to shore up anything on a Super Bowl team, I would say you got to go with the defense, especially when this team was built on defense.
I agree 100%. I think that, obviously, they're going to need to win more games on defense again this year. And quite frankly, the conference they're in favors that, because there is no powerhouse offense in the entire conference anyway. So they play good defense, they can win, and, you know, even Mark Sanchez can give them a chance to win in that division.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised. Mark Sanchez, you know, definitely isn't the guy I want under center for the start of the season, but the guy has been to two AFC Championship games, if you remember, with the Jets, what seems like almost a decade ago. But, you know, I mean, talking more about this deal, the $114 million, second biggest contract in history for the NFL defensive player. The number one was Ndamukong Suh, 6 years, $114,375,000. It's basically the same amount, but you know, we know in the NFL it's all about the guaranteed money, and that's where Von
Miller. That's where we got the big cash, and you know, and he's also, look, let's face it, sports money now has become monopoly money. The TV money, the ad money is so big that they can give these guys whatever they want. They're just making so much money.
Right. And I think, you know, the biggest disparity, I think, is in football, which is why I'm glad to see such a big contract for such a great player, because, you know, I feel like football contracts overall give the guys, you know, the worst end of the deal. I mean, you see these top guys making a lot of guaranteed money, but for a sport that I think puts your health at the most risk compared to, you know, the NBA and the MLB, you know, it'd be nice to see these guys make a little bit more money for what they put their bodies through on an everyday basis.
Well, you know, I'll tell you, the union did a bad job. The collective bargaining, there was a little bit too much collusion back in the day when this contract was written, and I don't think you'll see it written again. It's hard to give long-term guaranteed contracts, but I think you'll see some of the short-term contracts will be more guaranteed now. I cannot imagine the union could make another bad deal like this again, because their lives are very short, and you're one play away from being done.
Right. And, you know, on the other side of the issue, you know, I do think that NFL players should make more money, but I saw a very well-written article last week, you know, talking about, you know, why, you know, average Major League Baseball players make so much more money, you know, than you know, NFL stars. And it was basically, you know, the cap is bigger in the NFL, but you have to remember that each team consists of 53 players, not just, you know, 20 or the starting nine. In Major League Baseball, so that's one thing to think about, and that's where you see.
Yeah, but Major League Baseball's got 40, and Major League
they've got 25 on the.
Yeah, but they
roster.
Have 40 on their active roster, not on their active roster, but on part of their roster that they can protect. And then I don't know the dynamics of the big club, what they have to put down, but they've all got, you know, 9 or 10 farm affiliates too. Now those are, a lot of those are independently owned by somebody else. But there is some pay going down there as well. I mean, I get it, but...
Right. Well, I'd say my main point is that, you know, the cap per player is just so much less in the NFL because there's more players they have to pay. I mean, that's the basic point.
It's because they did a bad job with the agreement with the collective bargaining. That's why it's so much lower.
All right, enough about the contracts. Deflategate, which was going on while I was a sophomore in college. I got 1 year left. 18 months ago... And finally, Tom Brady is going to be punished. It's going to happen. 4 games at the start of this year. He's done appealing. He's not going to go to the Supreme Court. It doesn't mean that, you know, the Players Association isn't going to take it any further, but Tom Brady's dropped his appeal. He's not going to play the first 4 games of 2016. And I'm shocked that this has gone this far. I mean, it's unbelievable to me.
I think Goodell was out to prove a point. I think that he battled it. I think he figured out a way to finagle it out. And you know what? The truth of the matter is, I think underneath it all, Tom Brady's probably happy. He gets 4 games off. They're going to be fine anyways. He gets the other quarterback some work, and he gets a rest. So I think at the end of the day, he put it on Facebook yesterday that he was not going to appeal any further.
Right, and he actually restructured his contract a little bit. His base salary for this next coming year is only $1 million. And there is some stipulations in the contract. But basically, he saved himself a couple million bucks by lowering his base salary for this year. I don't know if that was in anticipation that he would get suspended, but whatever the case, he's going to save a few bucks. Not that he needs them, but, I mean, this whole situation, I thought, from the get-go was just absurd. I mean, it was a ridiculous.
Stupid.
The game wasn't even close. It wasn't close in the first or second half, regardless of what happened. And I agreed with the Patriots that I didn't think there was enough information to prosecute Brady. And eventually the appeals got overturned, and Brady wasn't going to get suspended. But the point I'm trying to make is for this to be going on almost 2 years later is absolutely ridiculous, especially for one, you know, probably one of the faces of the NFL and the face franchise of the NFL. But, you know, we'll talk a little more about it after the break. If you missed the show, you know where to find us, libertytalk.fm, and we will see you after the break. Welcome back to the Sporting Edge with Xander and Bubba. So, Bubba, we were talking about Tom Brady before the break, and I just wanted to read, you know, what he put on Facebook last week. He said, "I'm very grateful for the overwhelming support I've received from Mr. Kraft, the Kraft family, Coach Belichick, my coaches and teammates, the NFLPA, my agents, my loving family, and most of all, our fans. It's been a challenging 18 months, and I've made the difficult decision to no longer proceed with the legal process. I'm going to work hard to be the best player I can be for the New England Patriots, and I look forward to having the opportunity to return to the field this fall." And I really agree with you, Bub. I don't think this affects the Patriots at all. I do think they have a couple tough games in their schedule in the first four games. They're starting off the season with the Cardinals, who, if you remember, were my Super Bowl champions. That was my prediction after they got knocked out of the playoffs last year. But regardless, I still think they take this division. I don't think the Dolphins or the Jets had the firepower to compete with them. And the Bills, you know, I'm never really sold on the Bills, no matter. No.
Rex Ryan is Rex Ryan. No matter where he's at, he can't score. And I got news for you. Garoppolo's a pretty good quarterback, too. I mean, he's no slouch. He can do a good job.
You know, regardless, we'll see. But, I don't think this affects them really at all. And, you know, Tom Brady, it's amazing that, you know, after this whole thing got brought up with that tweet from Bob Kravitz, that he could have technically won two Super Bowls after this whole thing started. I mean, he won one that year when the Deflategate started, and then last year, you know, they could have won another one. So the fact that he could have been suspended after, you know, winning two Super Bowls, he did win one. It's just a crazy thought, but I think, you know, that's just a look at our legal system and how long stuff, and not just Deflategate, but how long things actually take to get going. But I think this looks bad for Roger Goodell. I mean, he hasn't really done much right since he became the commissioner of the NFL, and I think this is just another, you know, kind of slight against, you know, a guy in Tom Brady, a guy in Robert Kraft, and a team in the Patriots that have really been the face of the NFL for the past 15 years. I mean, the Patriots are the definition of success in the National Football League for as long as I've been watching. I mean, I remember when I was a little kid watching, you know, Tom Brady win his first Super Bowl. And, you know, I was 6 years old. I mean, the Patriots have been the best team by far over that period. And to see Roger Goodell try to wield his, you know, power sword with the arbitration, you know, independently arbitrating the case at first, you know, I thought it was in very bad taste.
Roger Goodell's an asshole.
Right. You know, I'm trying to say it a little more politely than that. But
I'm going to say it the way I want. Maybe it's about time to get rid of him.
Right. But Roger Goodell, I think his tenure as the NFL commissioner has been pretty piss poor. I love the league and I love everything about it. But, you know, the stuff that he's done, I think is very questionable. But, you know, we got the British Open this week, Bub, and the first couple days were fun to watch. Got Phil Mickelson playing some of the best golf of his life, I think. I mean, at almost 50 years old, the guy broke the two-round record at the Open Championship. I mean, what are your thoughts so far in the tourney as we head into day three?
Phil Mickelson is the luckiest man on the face of the earth right now. He caught the weather both days. That's the way golf goes. But he happened to catch the weather both days, and he finished yesterday morning before all the stuff started. And he was coming in right as it started to get really nasty. And then, of course, the wind was blowing sideways. It was pouring. It was ugly. And you saw, I think it was a Billy Horschel went from minus four to plus third to plus nine. Okay, I mean it was unbelievable watching how these things go, and it was. I mean, look, Phil played great, but if the weather's like this today and tomorrow, nobody's 10 under. I wouldn't be surprised if we see even money, even par win this tournament if the weather's like it was yesterday.
Right, and we were watching Friday, I think around noon our time. You know, we're in Chicago, so Central time, and the weather was pouring rain. It was windy. It was tough to watch. I mean, these guys were struggling out there. You know, trying to keep their hands dry, keeping the clubs dry. I mean, it was a cluster, you know what. And like you said, I think Phil played great and almost broke the record for a single round in his first round with a huge putt that lipped out. But, I mean, the weather is such a big factor at the British Open, and we talked about that last week. I mean, it's the luck of the draw, and sometimes, you know, Phil got really lucky and he played well, but, I mean, the guy's playing in the afternoon.
Hey, he played great. He deserves to be where he's at. He caught a break, but you still got to take advantage of it. I mean, you know, Reed was out at the home there the same time as Phil was, and he didn't have such a good day today. So, you know, it's It's all about it. I mean, it's a very challenging course. There's so many things that can go wrong there anyways. And you see balls bouncing sideways. And, you know, that's – you want to talk about a tough track. You shot at Highland Park the other day, you shot probably, I would guess, probably 100.
Here you might shoot 300. That's being generous.
Here you might shoot 300. Okay. They might not find you out there.
I might not have enough balls in the bag to finish a round at the Open Championship. But, you know, that's just me. We take a look at the rest of the leaderboard. We got the big Swede, Henrik Stenson, finished his first two rounds at 9-under. I mean, the guy played unbelievable, went 68-65. Keegan Bradley, you know, 7-under, Clensen, an unknown, I don't even know if I said his name right. He's 7-under going into the third day. Zach Johnson, you know, following up a good first performance in the U.S. Open with a 5-under through two rounds. Sergio's hanging in there. Got Charles Schwartz.
Now, Sergio, the only bad weather can benefit him because he's so bad with his putter that it could only help him because he can't get any worse. So the bad weather could only – I'm serious.
Right.
A terrible weather day could only help Sergio Garcia because that would put him more on even par.
And that was my fear for Dustin Johnson heading into this tournament because I don't think the length really doesn't play as much into this tournament as it did in the Open. And, you know, we saw Dustin Johnson drive the ball just so much better than everybody else. I mean, he was, you know, his second shots, you know, were 30 to 40 yards closer than anybody, and his putting wasn't great, but I mean, he found a way to take such a huge advantage on his first shots. But it you know, at the British Open, I really don't think it is as big of a deal, and that's what I worry about with a guy, a really talented guy. But, you know, I think if you're going to be the best and stay on top for a while, you got to have a good putter. Am I right?
Listen, it's always the short stick that does it, and it's really funny because I've never seen a spread in strokes this wide into a tournament. You know, you've got like a 14 shots difference. It's the widest I've ever seen that I can remember from first to last now because of the way they pick the, you know, you have to, the way they qualify before the cut. So it was pretty wild.
Yeah, and so Mike Piazza is getting voted into the Hall of Fame and is still being questioned about steroid use. You know, he was having a press conference last week, and the first question he got, you know, was whether or not he used steroids, and he said, you know, I've addressed that in the past. Now, Bub, I didn't really get to see Mike Piazza play that much. I was a little bit too young, but, I mean, what are your thoughts on the guy? Did he take steroids? Does it matter anymore? I mean, what are your thoughts?
Well, he was more of a golden boy, and everybody liked him, so whether he did or he didn't, he's going to get away with it. He was a great hitter. He was not the greatest backstop in the world. But the funny thing is he was only taken by Tommy Lasorda as a favor to his father. Okay? So he was a guy that wasn't even supposed to be there and turned out to be one hell of a hitter and a team leader. And did he take steroids? I don't know. You know, I've never heard it circulate around him much then. We hear it a lot more now. There's a lot of guys that are in the Hall of Fame that took steroids that you never heard from. We didn't check it out. And the only guys that aren't in right now are the guys that were really pricks about it, like Barry Bonds and like Mark McGuire. And Mark McGuire's trying to show some contrition now, and, you know, he may get in someday. And,
right, but, and even Barry Bonds is, you know.
Barry Bonds is doing a nice job, and, you know, he may get in someday too. But at the end of the day, you know what, one thing about this country, we talk about it all the time, but one thing about this country, we are very forgiving. But when you lie and you try to hide from the truth, we don't like you. You know, A-Rod, you know, this wasn't his first go-around. The first time, everybody still loved A-Rod. Now everybody hates him because he went back and lied again. And to me, that's the problem. If Barry Bonds and Mark McGuire would have come out and Roger Clemens would have come out and said, I did it. I'm sorry I did it. I didn't mean I did it. And I did it. They'd vote him in. That would be the end of the day. But they were all miserable sons of bitches
right.
Anyway.
I tend to agree with you. And I think a perfect example, I don't think he'll make the Hall of Fame, but a guy like Andy Pettit. You know, if you remember, he got popped for steroids, came out right away, apologized. You know, he said, I'm sorry, I made a mistake. And now I don't even think half the people who are baseball fans would know that Andy Pettit took steroids. Another guy, you know, who was a real big prick, Lance Armstrong. And he's a guy I compare a lot to A-Rod because he ruined a lot of people's lives trying to cover up his lie. And now he's one of the most hated athletes, you know, I think in the history of sports. But we'll get to it after the break. If you miss a show, you know where to find us, libertytalk.fm. We'll be back after a short break.
trust. For nearly four decades, that is the reputation Roberts & Roberts Brokerage has forged with their customers. Now, with their full e-commerce website, rrbi.co, it's easier than ever to buy or sell precious metals via Bitcoin or major credit card. Visit them online at rrbi.co or call 800-874-9760 to speak with an experienced professional today. Roberts & Roberts, when you're serious about precious metals.
What's up, everybody? Bubba here. It's finally here, the long-awaited Bubba Report, bringing you news from all the trading floors across the globe. We've got Scott Cialady, the cow guy, as seen on CNBC, Fox, and Bloomberg. We've got Keith Bliss, CNBC, Fox, and a floor trader at the New York Stock Exchange. We've got the Badger, who writes the hot topics in the political news. We've got myself putting together my own unique indexes that will help you give you a better idea of what's going on in the market. All you need to do to get a hold of the Bubba Report is go to thebubbashow.org and sign up for the newsletter, or you can email me direct at bubba@thebubbashow.org. We want you to have this report because we've got over 150 years of experience talking about markets, getting ready for the trading, and puts you in the best position to have successful. So email me at bubba@thebubbashow.org to get a copy of your report, or go right to the website, thebubbashow.org. Make sure you get it. It's a must-have for every investor and trader. The Bubba Report.
Welcome back to the Sporting Edge with Xander and Bubba. Bubba, so I ended the break. We were talking about guys taking steroids, lying about it, and, you know, just overall being very hated by the public. And it's just an overall American public is very forgiving. I mean, almost every aspect of life you look at, not even sports. Look at a guy like Bill Clinton. I mean, he was a guy who could have came out and admitted his wrong right away, and I think he'd been a lot more respected about it. But, you know, let's talk a little bit about the Boston Celtics. It seems like every big trade rumor in the NBA circulates around one team, and it's the Boston Celtics. Now we've got talks about possibly Russell Westbrook, possibly Blake Griffin, them making a move for those guys. The Boston Celtics have something going on. I mean, Danny Ainge, Brad Stevenson, I think they got a great plan moving forward, and I know we patted them on the back an awful lot last week, but I can't help but keep doing it. I mean, they're just... Now they're playing the game. They finally got their first big signing in Al Horford, and now whether or not they get these guys in trade sooner or later, I mean they're playing the game. They're playing the free agent game, the trade game. They're doing everything, and I feel like they're going to be a superpower in the next few years in the Eastern Conference.
I agree. Listen, we talked about them. You know, we first talked about them on the draft, and their draft. We didn't understand what they were drafting, but it looks like they have a master plan. And you know, I think the Celtics are going to be coming back to the glory days of Larry Bird and before, so we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, I think the most likely target right now is probably Blake Griffin. I'm not the biggest fan of Blake Griffin. I think he's a really talented player. I don't know how well he's going to fit.
I think he's a putz.
All right, well, regardless of the fact, he is a big name and an all-star in the NBA. So, I mean, that could be a big trade. I don't think Russell Westbrook is going to Boston so fast, but it's easy to see a team like Oklahoma City willing to deal with Boston because they got so many young guys and so many draft picks. I mean, you look at a team like the Thunder after they let KD go. If they let Westbrook go, I mean, they're pretty much going into rebuilding mode. They got some decent young guys, too. I mean, Steven Adams really stepped up these past couple years. Deion Waiters, they let go of Serge Ibaka. So, they're leaning younger right now, I think, and if they get rid of Westbrook, really hard to say, they're going to go towards younger, more draft picks.
I think they're definitely in a rebuilding process. I don't think that. I think once they lost Durant, that's the end of it. And Westbrook is great, and they were a great combo. But without Durant, they've got nothing. And I think they're gonna get what they can get from Boston. And Boston does have, as you mentioned, some great talent, and they'll get some draft picks. And certainly, if they can sign him, because I know he's a free agent next year, if they can do a sign and trade type of deal, then Oklahoma City's gonna get a haul from Boston.
Right, and that's the thing about it is Boston is setting up. They're a team that I think is gonna be very good this year. And they also have a lot of pieces to deal. So I think, Boston's becoming, the center of deals in the NBA because they've got a lot of great pieces and they've got a lot of draft picks, in, which is teams who are in rebuilding mode. That's what they want. So, Bub, I think we got to talk a little bit about college football now. We had a very fun SEC media weekend. We had 4 days. We saw Nick Saban get into it with Mike Feinbaum about punishing his players, whether or not he should be the one to do it, whether or not they're going to get suspended. And it even continued off the air a little bit. Nick Saban was getting real fired up about it, and that just excites me because I love the SEC. I mean, they've been the best conference, I think, in college football for as long as I can remember. So I think we take a look at the preseason rankings, and every poll's got Alabama on top and Clemson number two, Stanford at number three, and then we've got a little mix up with Ohio State and Oklahoma at four and five. You know, I think that team to beat again has got to be Alabama.
It's always Alabama, and this is the problem with the coach disciplining the players, that those players did not do nice stuff. I don't know. Obviously, I'm not there. I'm not the judge. I'm not the jury. But certainly, I'm sure they're not getting enough. But because of who they are, they're going to skate by the system once again. And this is a big problem with youth sports and then college sports, because still, when you're better than everybody else, you somehow magically get that pass and find yourself getting away with something when maybe you shouldn't. And I think, you know, Feinbaum might have a point, but again, Nick Saban's a great coach, but this, to me, they should not be playing, at least in the first couple of games, if at all.
Right. I mean, it's hard to judge. I mean, still don't have all the details, but it seemed a little fishy how the whole situation went down. I don't know if we'll ever know all the details, but you know, Nick Saban was very adamant about the fact that, you know, he didn't want to be told what to do with his players. And regardless of the fact, Alabama is the team to beat. Clemson at number two. And, you know, going back to last year, Bub, I thought Clemson, they had a great shot in that national championship game and really, really pissed down their leg in the fourth quarter. I mean, I thought Alabama played a pretty solid game, but Clemson and Deshaun Watson, I thought, had a great chance to win. I mean, I think they're going to have a chance again this year. I mean, Deshaun Watson, I thought, was probably the best quarterback in college football last year, and I think he's going to even be better next year.
Well, I think they had a good chance, but they were pretty beat up last year going into that game. I think there was a lot of injuries on their part, and I thought they were in quite a bit of trouble. I mean, they gave it a go, and they had to get the old backdoor cover to cover the point spread, but their linebacker was injured. They were pretty beat up. And one thing about Alabama, if you can't get away from them, then they're going to punish you, and punish them they did. You know, a few too many turnovers, not quite a crisp enough game to win that game. Certainly, Alabama is very beatable, but it has to be under the right circumstances, like the way Ohio State manhandled them a couple of years ago. If you can get on top of them, like a great racehorse, you can kill them. But that's the point. You got to get on top of them, and they make it hard to do so.
Right. And, you know, looking at the rest, I'd say let's go through the top 15 teams in the AP Associated Press top 25 poll. We've got, you know, Ohio State at four, Oklahoma, Michigan State, TCU, Houston, Iowa, right, Ole Miss, Notre Dame, Michigan, Baylor, Florida State, North Carolina rounding out the top 15. And we got LSU peeking in at 16. Bubba, I think for Les Miles, I mean, something's got to happen here, I think, this year for him to keep his job there. I mean, they've been a very good team for the past decade, but, you know, the playoff success hasn't really been there since that last national championship, and that was a long time ago.
Well, Les Miles is more or less the Rex Ryan of college football. Always has a great defense. He has trouble generating an offense. His last good quarterback—well, let me not say that. He's had a couple of good quarterbacks. He doesn't know what to do with them. His last star quarterback was Jamarcus Russell, who turned out to be one of the biggest busts ever in the NFL. However, you know, Mecklenburg, who played, but he doesn't seem to be able to call a good offensive scheme. And unfortunately for him, is he gets one tier below the athletes, the total athletes that Nick Saban gets. That's why there's always a separation. They always play a great game, but they don't quite have the creativity to run a good offense. I think that's more the problem.
Right, and you think by now that, I mean, you look at Nick Saban, the guy is, I think, you know, he said constantly he's got different offensive coordinators. I mean, so Lane Kiffin, he's seen other guys. You know, he's figured it out, I think. You know, he's a defensive mastermind, and he's found, you know, guys on offense that can make it work. You know, whether that's the players, the coordinators, I think that's where Les Miles has really come up short. I mean, the guy is a defensive genius. I pretty much put him on the same level as Nick Saban. And the fact that Alabama's had so much success over the past 10 years, I mean, that success kind of breeds success. And that's where I think you get, like you said, Bob, you know, LSU gets a slightly less crop of players. Not to say that they all have their five-star top 10 recruits, but overall, Bama gets more of the guys. But
I think that Bama gets, I think you're 100% right. They'll all get the equal guys, you know, the top 10, whatever it is. But then Alabama's got a starting 11 for almost any other team in the country as their second string. So they're a lot more easily plug and play versus LSU will get a great team and have a couple of guys, but they won't be that strong at every position, in my opinion.
Right, and that's where you see Alabama is constantly able to outlast teams. I mean, we look at this past, you know, 8-year stretch. I mean, Alabama's been the number one team by far. It's kind of funny thinking back to the last time they played in the national championship. I think it was 3 years ago. You know, LSU did not get past the 50-yard line, I think, till 2 minutes left in the fourth quarter, and that was just like the epitome of, you know, the difference of Alabama and LSU the past 10 years. Just the offense hasn't been there, and the consistency hasn't been there. And you know, I'd like to see somebody dethrone Alabama. You know, I don't know if it's going to happen, though. I mean, Clemson, Stanford, Ohio State, Oklahoma, these are very good teams. I don't know if they have what it takes to knock them off their pedestal. I don't know if it's going to happen this year. But we'll see. I mean, we got games coming up soon, end of August. We're about a month away. I mean, it's going to be real interesting. And we got the NFL coming up. A lot of exciting things. You know, we both love football. We spend a lot of time talking about baseball on this show. But when football season's going on, I think we treat the sports pretty equally. Talking about baseball, however, we just had the All-Star break. We had our first day back in action yesterday. And, Bubba, what'd you think about, you know, the Home Run Derby, the All-Star game? Did you enjoy it? Did you like see Giancarlo Stanton put up 60 bombs? How did it go for you?
I mean, I liked it. I thought it was a good deal. I mean, you know, I'm not a big fan of it. I think it's still too long. But it was fun to watch Stanton, and I hope that he gets it together because he is an exciting hitter. I mean, that guy hits missiles, so it's kind of fun to watch him.
Yeah, I mean, it was an absolute freak show that he put on, and it was awesome. You know, he hasn't been hitting well this year, but ran into a real big hot streak a few weeks before the break, and it was apparent the guy was just mashing balls all over San Diego's field, and it was cool to watch. But we'll talk about it more after the break. If you miss the show, libertytalk.fm, that's where you're going to find us. We're going to talk more MLB and give an outlook for the rest of the season after the break. Welcome back to the Sporting Edge with Xander and Bubba. Bub, so we were talking about the Home Run Derby, Giancarlo Stanton winning. It was an unbelievable show he put on. It was really cool to see Todd Frazier make it back all the way to the finals. Didn't quite have enough juice at the end. I mean, Stanton put up three, you know, unbelievable rounds. It was going to be tough to beat. And I think that's really why you watch the Home Run Derby. You watch it for guys like Giancarlo Stanton to hit, you know, 475-foot bombs that kind of just make your jaw drop. The All-Star game, I thought wasn't that interesting. I mean, it was pretty close. The NL had a chance to tie the game at the top of the eighth when Alemdes Diaz came up with the bases loaded and two outs. Great pitch. I don't even remember the pitcher's name, but, you know, 3-2 fastball right in the outside corner. You know, it was a great pitch, and that's kind of where the game ended. I still don't understand the logic behind making, you know, the All-Star game decide home field advantage in the playoffs. It makes no sense to me. I think this is, you know, still...
Because the fans put up such a stink in 2003, I think it was, or two, right, whatever we talked about.
You know, the fans need to get a life. I mean...
Well, the fans shouldn't be picking the team.
Right.
The whole thing game is a mess. The only good thing about the All-Star game is you get almost the best effort from all the players all the time. Once in a while, you know, Jeter got a meatball laid up to him so he could get his final hit. And, of course, Hernandez said he was going to lay up a couple of fastballs to Ortiz. But overall, you do get – that is the best played game of all the All-Star games, in my opinion.
Right. I mean, because I think baseball – out of all the sports, you know, basketball, football, baseball is kind of the hardest to half-ass. I mean, you really – it really just doesn't work. You know, football, you see the guys, and they don't tackle too hard. They kind of slow up. Basketball, there's no defense. It's just kind of an offensive show, which it was just cool to watch. Baseball, it's kind of hard to go half speed. I mean, you know, you jog the ground ball, it just doesn't work, and it's hard. You can't hit half speed. I mean, there's no way. So, I mean, baseball is the best game, I think, simply because baseball is not a game that can be played half speed. But regardless, I mean, I think the weekend should just be to more enjoy the talents of the players that are out there. I mean, I would love to see something like, you know, maybe quickest hands in the infield. Yeah, kind of like I went to Cooperstown when I was 12 years old. There was a home run derby. There was a speed contest. There was a team, you know, throwing contest. There was an individual quickest hands from shortstop contest. I mean, I think that's really what All-Star Weekend is meant for. We get to see the best players performing at their peak level. And the All-Star game, I don't think the guys don't care that much about it, and it's
a lot of guys don't want to be there. They're voted in, but you know they're tired. You know, baseball is a grueling sport, as you know. You play it day and night. You're traveling. It's 162 games. It's way too long. And a lot of guys like that week off to be off. They don't want to come in. You know, they don't mind coming to party and fool around with their buddies, you know, on the Monday night for the Home Run Derby and then the game Tuesday. But a lot of them would like to just relax and not have to do these drills, which is why you'll never see something like that, because it becomes too hard. And, again, I don't even like my fantasy players in the Home Run Derby because they usually come back and they stink when they come back from that.
Yeah, so, I mean, the All-Star game, it's a weird parody because, you know, at one time you got home field advantage for the World Series, and at the same time you got guys who, you know, probably don't want to be there. They've been playing 82 games so far. They want a break. And it's weird because, you know, you need an All-Star from each team, so some guys don't even give a crap whether the game is won. You know, if I'm on the Brewers, I'm on the Reds, do I really care if my league wins the game? I mean, no. You know, they're not going to make it to the World Series. So it's just a combination. It's like, you know, oil and water. It just doesn't mix. It doesn't go well. This weekend should be more about enjoying the players, you know, and not putting such a big result on the game. I mean, being a home field advantage in the World Series is a huge advantage, and it should not be decided by what's more or less a meaningless game. But, you know, let's move on. Let's talk about some more important stuff. The Red Sox made a huge splash. Dave Dombrowski working his magic, and they added Drew Pomeranz to their rotation. I think this was an amazing move for the Red Sox. Everybody knew they needed rotation help, and in a division where the top three teams, you know, you can make an argument that they're the top three offenses in baseball, they all had problems with their rotation. The Red Sox went and did something about it. They did give away their number one pitching prospect, but, you know, he's a prospect. Hasn't pitched a major league inning yet, and I think for a guy like Drew Pomeranz, who's got a 2.5 ERA and pitching very well for the Padres this year, this Red Sox team has a chance to win the World Series right now. So I love the move by Dombrowski.
I mean, Pomeranz is an interesting story. He wasn't even sure he was going to make the club, and he wasn't sure he was going to be in rotation. And all of a sudden, now he's now being laid a lot and got a lot traded for him. And, you know, one thing about baseball, and this is another thing that, you know, we compared to other sports, prospects are, in baseball, just prospects. There is no necessarily of a translation. I mean, guys who can hit, that can really hit, they usually translate pretty well. But pitchers, there's a lot that goes on between the years, between the time they get drafted. And, yes, there's a few, Strasburg and a couple of the others, but for the most part, Pomeranz, you know, he's an established guy who's having a great year for a crappy team. He was 8-7. I mean, you know, he's really been on fire the last four or five starts. So we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, and Pomeranz throwing real well this year, and I think, like I said, this could be the move that vaults the Red Sox. Because you look at the Orioles, I mean, Chris Tillman has been okay so far. He's been really good. He's been really bad. Kevin Gausman, you know, has a great strikeout ratio, but again, not, you know, a guy you want to really headline your rotation. Yovani Gallardo, Ubaldo Jimenez, these are a bunch of hit and miss guys, and I'd be very surprised if the Orioles didn't go out and make a move. And I would say shame on you if they didn't make a move, because they're going to need more rotation depth if they want to win this division. I mean, the Boston Red Sox, they've shown us over the past 10 years, they're willing to go out, make some sacrifices, make some moves, and they've won two World Series, broke their World Series drought. And if the Orioles are going to sit by and not make a move by the deadline, I'd say they're going to finish no better than third, maybe even fall to fourth. They're a team that they've been playing above expectations this year. I honestly do. I mean, this offense has been on fire. They've got probably the most fearsome three hitters in a row in baseball with Machado, Trumbo, and Chris Davis. But if they don't make a move, I think this is the Red Sox division to take. And you look at the Blue Jays, Troy Tulowitzki has been on fire lately. I think that's a great sign for them. You know, a lot of people said this year he was getting old and was not the Troy Tulowitzki you used to see in Colorado. But, you know, he's really turned around. J.A. Happ pitching very well. Aaron Sanchez.
They need pitching desperately. If they don't get pitching, I think Baltimore's got no chance to get there. They got great hitting, but, again, you know that hitting never wins at all. And you know, well, we don't know, but I say David Price has a monster second half for Boston. Pomeranz will be good, and it makes everybody else better as well.
Right, and then I think you look at the Blue Jays. I think their rotation is a little bit better than the Orioles, but not much. I mean, Marco Estrada, Aaron Sanchez was an all-star this year. J.A. Happ. I think they definitely need another guy, though. And that's exactly what the Red Sox needed, and they went out and got him. So, I mean, there's plenty of teams that are willing to sell this offseason. You know, you just got to find them and find the suitors. Let's talk a little bit about the White Sox. They're calling up 2015 number one pick Carson Fulmer. They're going to bring him into the bullpen. And, you know, watching Fulmer pitch at Vanderbilt, I mean, Bub, he was fun to watch. This guy is a gamer. a little got some funky mechanics on him, but he was really fun to watch. And I think the White Sox, you know, if they make a run, they've got a chance, but I don't know if they're going to catch the Indians.
The White Sox are going to be sellers. That's my opinion. I've watched them, obviously, for years. And I think, you know, they're bringing these guys up now because you're going to start to see, obviously, Sale's not going anywhere. But the you could see a Rodon go. Certainly, they'd love to trade Miguel Gonzalez now because they have no chance. Their team is just not good enough, and Rodon's been pretty much a disappointment. Quintana seems to have come back, but they're going to start playing now because they've got guys that need to be gone, and I think they're going to be sellers.
Right, and yeah, we got about a minute left, Bub, so a quick outlook on the rest of the season. Number one team in the MLB right now, I think it's the San Francisco Giants. I mean, you look at the injuries to Duffy and Panic. Hunter Pence has been out for a while, but people said the bullpen isn't reliable. The back-end rotation has been a mess. Meanwhile, they have the best record in baseball. The biggest fall in the past month has been the Cubs. They're now ranked at number 6 in CBS Sports Power Rankings. Rounding out the top 5, we got the Nats, the Indians, the Blue Jays, and the Rangers. And I think this is going to be a great second half. We get a few divisions that have come a lot closer in the past couple weeks. I mean, there's obviously a couple that are far and away gone. You know, the NL Central is going to be won by the Cubs, but a lot of interesting stuff, a lot of great baseball left to be played, and that's all we got for this week. If you miss a show, you know where to find us, libertytalk.fm. That's all we got for this week. We'll recap the British Open next show, and we will talk about the first week back of baseball. Have a great weekend, everybody. Bye-bye.
Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.